My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert, recording this episode on Wednesday, August 10th, 2022. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you rate podcasts. Give this show a five-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and subscribe. $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. Shout out to Greg S. for signing up. This is episode 591. There's no guest. It's just me sitting here in my apartment late afternoon. And we're going to get into this. My apologies for the 15 people that were disappointed on Sunday morning when there was no new Mundane Festival podcast. My apologies. Hopefully, those of you that were waiting for it, you caught up on some that you missed. But, you know, I've been busy. I've been busy, good busy, with life things, with auditions, some good auditions that I turned in. I'm feeling good about myself as an artist. Be nice to book some. That's what I'm hoping for. So I'm constantly doing that, getting better. Always good to have an audition, because it's a possibility of something new. What's that Little Brother record? When everything is young, fresh, and new. What was that? What is that? Is that off of, oh my God. What record is that? Is that the end of the last one that they all did together? The one that came out in 2007? God, that's bad. I don't know what that is. I'm forgetting things. Get Back. I was about to look it up, but I didn't have to because I remembered it. And I don't have early onset dementia or Alzheimer's for now. So I did remember that song. I think that's the last record on the album, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't sing it in the right key, but you get the point. It's a good song. Fonte, Big Pooh, classic hip hop. Speaking of Little Brother, rapper Big Pooh's got an album coming out soon. I think it's towards the end of the month on the 26th. I like those two singles. I think I talked about that a couple of weeks ago on the show. So his two singles that he's got out already are fucking awesome. So I'm excited about that. I remember before iPods, kids, I used to carry around, because I worked at Best Buy, I had a Discman, and I had one of the flyest Discman. It was the sport kind, because the sport Discman, it was durable and it wasn't so delicate. I had a couple of those like portable ones. I remember when I was in high school, I didn't have a stereo system. You know, my dad had a stereo. We had a stereo system in the basement that actually had a record player on it. And I would make mixtapes. I didn't make that many mixtapes. I made a bunch of, my dad had a bunch of comedy albums that we talked about. I think we had it on, talked about it when I reposted his episode earlier this year that we did in 2013, and he tried to deny it. But he had Richard Pryor's That Nigger's Crazy. And that was like my, I think that was, I knew about Richard Pryor. Maybe I've seen some of his stuff, but it was when I started to really get into stand up that I listened to that, and it just fucking blew me away. Like all the characters he did, just a amazing album. And I made a tape of that, and in my alarm clock, I would just go to sleep and listen to Richard Pryor, Paul Mooney, Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence, and just like go to sleep listening to that stand up. And how did I get on this? Just talking about, it was, okay, we're talking about Discman. So I had this, just a standard issue Sony. I was a Sony kid just like whatever the cool, it didn't necessarily, it wasn't like the, always like the, those things were pretty expensive back in the day, but I had one of those Discmen, and I had the speakers that were portable, and you hook one in the back of, you hook the right one into the left one, into the jack, excuse me, and then you hook it up to the CD player. It's pretty awesome. That was my sound system. I didn't need that much. But then I ended up getting one when I started working at Best Buy, like years later, I had a nice stereo setup. But speaking of rapper Big Pooh, he had this solo album called Sleepers. And I think I think my iPod was in the shop or something. At the time I was working at Best Buy and my iPod had conked out on me, and I think they fixed it. It was in like the Geek Squad was taking care of it or some shit. And I had to lug around that Discman. And I just kind of kept that rapper Big Pooh Sleepers album on deck. Just riding the train around the city, walking around the city, doing my business, mainly listening to that album. Good memories from that. In my days in Chicago as a young actor in graduate school, MFA program, working at Best Buy, trying to evolve as an artist. And it paid off because it got me to Broadway and a couple of speaking lines on some of your favorite TV shows. And hopefully more, because if more of that happens, the more residuals happen. And we're just going to keep building. We're just going to keep trying to stack these until 15 years later, they'll say, oh my God, Chris Lambert's an overnight success. And I'll be like, I've been doing this for years. Like Homer's dad, like I'll be that old. I finally get my shot. I hope it doesn't take that long. Don't want to turn this into the righteous prick. At least not at seven minutes in. We don't 7-8 minutes in. We don't want to turn into it yet. Shout out to the homie J.O. Covan. So it's a lot. I don't know how long this one's going to be. I'm just going to talk about some things. I just didn't want to leave you all with no podcast this week, because I owe it to you all and to my ego that I put some kind of content, some kind of content out this week. Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate got raided. Merrick Garland is doing his thing. I hope that he goes to jail. I don't know what else to say about that. I hope that they find what they're looking for, and all the people involved in those 4 years are dealt with by Lady Justice. Hope they get the book thrown at them. I don't know what else to say. I mean, then they did the racist that killed Ahmaud Arbery. Some of them, they got sentenced again, I think. I try not to look, but it seems like justice is slowly but surely being served on the people that it should be served on, at least this time. And that's pretty good. They'll talk about it on Three Guys On and The Black Guy Who Tips. They'll talk about it. That's how I get a lot of my news. I like going on there, but sometimes when you're living a double life as an artist and a corporate drone, you like to have your podcasts. It's very, because I don't know, there's millions of podcasts, but sometimes it's just good to have your old faithfuls. And it's good to just, because sometimes I'm like my dad used to be, oh, I'm going to save that. I'm going to save this Righteous Prick for when I go to work. I'm going to save Three Guys On. I'm going to save Firestarter. I'm going to save that to when I have to go into the office, when I have to drive somewhere, you know. So I like being on those shows and talking with them, but sometimes that takes away from my listening while I'm slogging away doing TPS reports. So that's usually, but eventually I will go back on when they have me. I did do a couple weeks ago, I did do the Nerd Off with Rod and Karen. That was fun. If you heard that was like last month, excuse me. And that was a lot of fun. I do want to talk about that a little bit later. I hope I don't forget. I wanted to talk about that. I think I did make myself a note to talk about that. Excited about people, justice being served. That's great. Hopefully, you know, they follow through. Serena Williams. Wow. Selena's on my mind. I saw, you know, because I have Googled Selena Gomez once or twice, Google thinks that I'm obsessed with her. So every time that I open Google, they'll tell me Selena Gomez news. Only Murders in the Building. I'm banking that for when it's over. So hopefully nobody spoils it. And then if they do, I probably wouldn't know what they're talking about because I haven't watched season two. So then one of these weekend nights, I'll have an adult beverage and watch the show, binge it or whatever. And apparently she's dating some rich guy. Man, I just, people talk about Pete Davidson. They hate on him for dating all these gorgeous women. I don't mind unless he start, and if he starts dating Selena, I will have a problem, Pete. But other than that, live your life, young man, and don't let the trolls get to you. Pete's a really sweet guy. He's one of those people that like got super famous, but is just still like low key, humble dude. I saw him because he directed a buddy's special. And I just saw him like last fall. Really nice dude. Just came in, Chris. You know, really, really great guy. So I hope he's doing okay amidst all this bullshit that people hurl at him. He'll be fine. I hope he'll be fine. Serena Williams is what I wanted to talk about. She is retiring soon, and I think she's at least one of the greatest American athletes, if not one of the greatest athletes of all time. And I'm not trying to, that's up there with the greats, all the things that she's accomplished. I think I said that a couple years ago, like people were like getting on it. Cause she's won 23 grand slams. I'm talking like a text. Recently, I've been having an influx of typos in my text messages that I have to do the asterisks and tell them what I really mean. I think I'm making some point, or I'm trying to be funny, and there's a typo. Like, what is that word? It's like, what am I doing here? I've had my phone long enough for it to know the words that I'm trying to type. It should be it should be a little more intuitive. And I'm looking at myself like I can't spell to, you know, my friends are thinking I can't spell. But anyway, she's retiring, and good for her. She wants to just do more stuff and be with her family and everything. So my parents loved Venus and Serena. My dad loved her so much. Both my parents, you'd think that they had her, like that she was, you know, I think when Venus and Serena were playing and I would call home, it would be like I wasn't even their kid, because Venus and Serena were playing. And that's one of the reasons I rooted for them, but it just got too intense for me. It was almost like it's the same way I feel about black quarterbacks, like in championship games. I still get nervous over that. And then I felt the same way about LeBron before he won the first time, really rooting for him because he was black. But LeBron, I mean, NBA is majority black, but because of all of the pressure heaped on him since he was like 16 or 17, or probably even before that. But I just remember seeing his, the first time he was on Sports Illustrated in 2002. I remember auditioning for grad schools and being at the mall and being in a Barnes & Noble, seeing that magazine. I was like, who's this kid? And saying, this is the chosen one or whatever. And saying, oh, they're putting a lot of pressure on that kid. And for him to, there's just a lot of pressure on him. And I just don't like the way the media treats him to a certain degree. And the real ones know what I'm talking about. Even after all he's accomplished. So I just remember that. And Serena, I felt the same way, and her and Venus. And I was like really nervous before they started accumulating all these titles, and just be nervous watching the thing. And I'm like, same way with Tiger, even though, you know, I don't know if he's claimed blackness yet, but I still root for him because it's still a tougher road for him to hoe and him to be dominant. Any black people in a predominantly white sport, you kind of root for a little more, and it becomes more nerve wracking for me. And I guess that's what I did inherit that from my parents. I used to do a bit about it. I don't really remember. It might be somewhere in the annals of YouTube. But yeah, so my parents actually bonded over Venus and Serena. My uncle who passed away last year, they got him into Venus and Serena. So they would call each other, you know, they'd call each other and when Venus and Serena were playing, they'd be watching the Tennis Network. They'd go to sleep early and then wake up at weird times at night just to watch her play and Venus, but mainly Serena they loved. And yeah, that she's a big part of my family. So it's definitely the end of an era, and I'll always associate her with my parents and all the entertainment that she gave them. My dad would treat her like, you know why? It's like they loved her so much. My dad would be hard. He'd be, God damn it, she's not doing it right. He'd treat her like you treat any other guy player that you get mad. Like if you really obsessed with this person or this team or a certain player, like he'd be really into it. He loved tennis. And so did my uncle. My uncle grew to love it. And that's what they would talk about all the time. So that was pretty dope. So it's just an end of an era. One of the greatest athletes to ever live. And it's not going to be the same. She and Venus revolutionized that sport and made women's tennis the thing to see. I mean, you had great ones, you know, on the male side, but I think I kind of feel like women's is more popular. It seems like it's just more competitive. I don't know, but from somebody on the outside looking in, it seems to me like the women's tennis is more popular. And hats off to Serena Williams, one of the greatest athletes to ever live. I was thinking about this like recently. I was thinking about like, I don't know how I want to get into this or if this is a Patreon thing. This might be a Patreon conversation that I have with somebody. I think it might be. But what I will say when it comes to what I do want to say is like, I'm thankful for the Black podcasting community and the one that I'm a part of. However, whether I'm a big or whatever small part I'm in that community, I'm happy to be a part of it because it's, you know, sometimes people talk about echo chambers, but if your echo chamber is filled with smart people and people that you respect and one that's constantly trying to evolve and trying to just having a thirst for knowledge, I think that's healthy. So I'm really thankful for like, I don't know if you call, cause I think I met Rod and Karen online before I met Randolph and Andy and Tim, because I think when I moved, my job moved in 2008 and I started, so I knew Rod and Karen through Twitter via Bomani Jones, via the Morning Jones, you know, Where's My 40 Acres, Firestarter, Three Guys On, JL is a beige podcaster. In the conversation, Damian Lemon, Ali Muhammad. There's a bunch, and then you start in, but just those main ones we've done stuff together on shows. It just made me, the past couple of weeks just made me feel really thankful for all of them, not only for the content that they provide, just for the, and also the community that, you know, they promote with just regular, normal people that are trying to, you know, just trying to live, trying to navigate the world, because the internet can be really hostile. And a lot of times you feel like you're alone in a lot of ways, whether it's physically alone or just alone in a room full of people. I mean, I know when I first moved here, the first couple of years, I had people that I would hang out with every now and then, but it ended up being like people that, if you listen to this podcast long enough, if you've heard this before, but just like, I didn't have the same interest as these people. And then we just went separate ways. Like, I didn't like to do the things that they did every week, and I didn't have the money for it either. So it was just a different type of people that I was around when I first moved here. And then, you know, opening up to that community that Bomani had with the Morning Jones and getting it to know Rod and Karen, it was cool because I felt less alone. And there were people that were on Twitter. When Twitter, you know, people always say, you know, oh, it was the Wild Wild West back then in 2007 when it first came out and people were wilding out. There were people wilding out on there and stuff, but it was also a place that I found community in with really kind and genuine people. And it made me feel good about a lot of the decisions that I was making. I don't know how. I don't know. It's a fascinating thing, the internet. I listen to podcasts. I try to, you know, I listen to other podcasts and I watch them on YouTube and some that other comedians have. And I think about that. I was just thinking like, man, if I became a person that was doing more, that things became more successful, would I do those shows? Because sometimes people go on podcasts to promote stuff. You know, they got a show coming up or they got a special coming out or to sell their wares and whatnot and their doodads and knickknacks. I get that. Like, it's cool to do that. And I see people do it. I see some of my white counterparts, my white peers do that. And they go on these shows and I'm just like, and some of the jokes that they make, and I'm just like, I don't think I could go on that show. And if you kind of feel bummed out, slightly bummed out, but not, but it's like, oh yeah, I have, and then I just think to myself, oh, I wouldn't have to do that. I could go on my friend's podcast and talk about the thing I made or the things that I'm doing. I don't need to go there. Sometimes those people might have more followers or have more of a reach, but then at the same time, it's like, I don't want to, I just don't think I would fit. You know, everybody wants to feel like it, you, some parts of you feel like there's FOMO when you're not making the rounds like you see some of your friends do. But then it's like, I don't think that I would want to. I asked some of my friends, I said, would you, oh man, nah. So would you be mad at me? Would you be mad at me if I did Rogan or, what would make you angrier at me if I did Breakfast Club or Rogan? And they swiftly said Rogan. And then they say, if you're black, it'd be in your best interest to go on the Breakfast Club. I would just have to be ready. I just don't like some of the stuff they said to some of my friends that were on there. And I was just like, I don't like what you're trying to do to one of my homies. I didn't appreciate that. And then it just kind of soured my brain. It just soured my mind on some of the things. And I was just like, some of it's kind of seems like it's kind of insidious. But if you have your guard up, I think you'll be fine. And if I'm to think positively a few years from now, if I'm trying to sell out Caroline's, I'd probably go on there or I'd just go on and whatever. You know, basically what I want to say is that I'm rambling here, but it just made me thankful that I have a safe space as as somebody who sometimes is doing something that he wants people to come to. Like when I put my album out, it was nice. I went number one. I debuted at number one. And I did go on some white podcasts. But the majority of the people that had me on that were with open arms, they were black. They were black podcasts. I just think sometimes black media, black art, and the thing that pisses me off is just like, when black art is diminished, when we're being copied, but you're going to still try to diminish the art that we make. And I was hinting at it a couple of weeks ago where one comic was white and the majority, like a popular podcast that was, everybody on the show were non-black people that were doing the podcast, and one of them mentioned Martin Lawrence. I think I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and it just made me so angry that they were like trying to. One person who revered Martin was like, "Oh, he's one of the greatest comics," and the other was like, "He's not the greatest." I was like, "Ah, way better than you, dude." Like, just because he did like at the time at one point Martin Lawrence was making $20 million a movie. And he was making it because he was really good at stand-up and he started getting acting roles. Like, Talking Shit is an album that's better than a lot of people's specials. Wire to wire. I think that's just he's one of those guys that he was the bridge between, what is it, like you want to say like Cosby, Pryor, as far as black comedians are concerned, you take like as far as like that got really popular, mainstream success, like Pryor, Murphy, Martin. And you did have Chris Rock, but like on some rock star shit where you're like acting and you're doing all these big movies, Chris Rock was in some good movies and stuff, but Martin Lawrence was like at the apex of what it is to be a famous black comedian, where you're doing TV shows, you got a sitcom, you have albums, you have specials. And he was able to, and I think Kevin Hart would say this, because Kevin Hart had Martin on his podcast recently, and kind of, I don't want it to sound derogatory, but like, he was, Kevin Hart in a lot of ways is like a Martin Lawrence, another version of Martin Lawrence, where Martin Lawrence was able to, like, it's like an evolution, how Eddie Murphy was this great looking guy. He was funny. He could do these characters. He's super talented. But Eddie was, even though he did it in his movies, showed vulnerability and everything, Martin was able to kind of take it to like, I'm on this rock star shit, but I'm going to show you like how I'm fucked up. Like crazy, deranged, that bit that he had when he was like a jealous boyfriend. That's like toxic masculinity stuff that we didn't have the vocabulary for it, but that's what he was talking about when he was being toxic. Thin Line Between Love and Hate, directed a movie. And I think Kevin Hart is kind of in that same vein of like a guy, I'm funny. I'm going to tell you about my life. I'm going to have this broad mainstream appeal, but I'm also going to show you that, I'm flawed too. I don't care if you like his comedy or not. I think Kevin's a funny dude. And I think I'm going to play your brother in a movie or a friend one day, but I'm not saying that just because. What I'm saying is it's that evolution of, I'm showing you, I'm taking it. He's taking the torch and moving it. He's doing, like I always say, the Lupe Fiasco line. What is it? Now I don't know. Did you improve on the design? Did you do something new? I think Kevin Hart's doing that really well, especially from a business standpoint. So I just don't like when black comics are they're being like made less than, when a lot of these people are the reason you have some of your great black comics today, whether they're like loud or boisterous, or whether they're low energy or laid back. You get all of these interesting people. Now you get all these interesting comics and these black comics that are talking about different things. You can have four or five. I remember just doing a show. God, I'm trying to remember. Just doing a show with like black dudes, black girls. And it was a fun show. Everybody was different. We weren't the same. Everybody was different, had different premises, different subject matter that we were talking about. I've been on plenty of those shows and they've been fun. So I don't know, man. It's something that I've noticed within the past, like I always say 5 to 7 years, but that's what it's been. You've seen this shift where it's like, and I don't think I sought it out, because I was 29 when I started. I was a grown man, and I didn't really seek approval that way. And obviously, when you do things, it's the white gaze is going to be involved, and you want acceptance. In show business, you want to be chose, but at the same time, man, I that's one of my pet peeves. I don't like when black art is devalued. That's like, you know, whether it comes from these kids getting their TikTok dances stolen, or whether it's trying to talk bad about a comic from back in the day. You know what I mean? It's a little different when It don't sit right for me. And it's what is it? If it looks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's a duck. I don't know that. What's that duck metaphor? You know what I'm talking about. Or it's ducks and porn, right? If it looks like porn, it's probably porn. So if you're talking shit about black art in that way. In a way, it's like it's jive racist. Like we say back in Maryland, back in the area. So it's just something I noticed, something that just kind of pissed me off. And because I watched a whole special a couple of days ago from a famous comic that said some kind of like sideways shit, but I wanted to see the context. And the context was like, because everybody just pulled this clip that was a minute, almost two, this maybe 2 minute clip, and was bashing that comic, dragging that comic, and they should have been, and rightfully so. But I just wanted to look at it within the context of what the comic was trying to do. And it's like, it's kind of hack. And it's like, you are a famous and you're doing this special. You have a lot of followers, people, you're selling this venue out, and that's all you gave them. But maybe that's all that that person could give them. Maybe that's all they had. So, but it just didn't look right. And I'm not going to name names. I'll just keep that for the text threads. But yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. Like Roots used to have a song. They still have a song called "It Don't Feel Right." Is that on Game Theory? I don't remember. It might be. Oh, another thing that was pretty interesting. This actor, Sean Bean, who was from Game of Thrones. I haven't seen it, but like there's this article in Deadline now about actresses speaking up after Game of Thrones star Sean Bean decries intimacy coordinators on set. And Sean Bean, he played Ned Stark on Game of Thrones, and he told, I couldn't get access to the whole article because they try to make you sign up and all this shit. He said in the article, he said he's not a fan of intimacy coordinators because he feared they would spoil the spontaneity of intimate scenes. I think the natural way lovers behave would be ruined by someone bringing it right down to a technical exercise, he said. It would inhibit me more because it's drawing attention to things. Shortly after Bean's words began to circulate online Monday, several prominent figures, including his Snowpiercer co-star Lena Hall, and the head of the British Broadcast Union, Bechtu, offered a very different perspective. West Side Story breakout Rachel Zegler, who noted in the past that she was 17 when she shot love scenes with her then 25-year-old Ansel Elgort for the film. Well, he had some trouble. Google him. Tweeted, intimacy coordinators establish an environment of safety for actors. I was extremely grateful for the one we had on West Side Story. They show grace to a newcomer like myself and educated those around me who have had years of experience. She said, responding directly to Bean's assertion, she wrote, spontaneity in intimate scenes can be unsafe. Wake up. She's absolutely right. Jamila Jamil, who plays a villain in Marvel's upcoming She-Hulk, replied directly to Bean's technical exercise assertion, writing, it should only be technical. It's like a stunt. Our job as actors is to make it not look technical. Nobody wants an impromptu grope. That's true. I mean, all these actresses are right. I mean, I had scenes where I had to kiss somebody in theater, but we didn't have it back in the day. But I remember, though, like, because I'm a nerd or whatever, like, you ask, you know, like, hey, is this safe? How do you feel about this? I remember I was doing this production of A Streetcar Named Desire in college, and I played Stanley, and who was the guy that said, when Brando, the Brando character that said, Stella. And I think I've had this Al Bundy moment where I talked about that play, but I was a black dude. I was like 19, it had to be 2000. No, it had to be 1999. Yeah, I was 19 years old, and my co-stars were white. And my Stella was a white girl from South Carolina. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, her parents came to the play and I, like, smacked her on the butt, smacked her on the ass. And I was, like, frisky with her. But we didn't, like, I didn't do anything. Grow up, I said, hey, can we do this? This cool? It's like, you know, we just talked about it. But I was respectful of her. But she was cute. Both of my leading ladies were very beautiful women. But we, when we did those scenes, those intense scenes, we did it in rehearsal. We did it on a closed set. A lot of times they do that stuff on closed sets, like in a closed rehearsal space, theater wise. And, yeah, you just want to be it. And like Jamila said, it's like a stunt. It should only be technical. It's like if you're doing a fight scene, you're not going to try to really fucking beat somebody up. I think I told this story before. Like when I did this production of Beowulf in my first year in graduate school, and there were stunts. We had fight scenes, and the kid that played Grendel was all intense. I'm going to kick your ass. And I was like, dude, no, I win. Have you read the script? I win. I'm the hero. I win, dude. Chill out. He was drinking like Red Bulls before the show. There's another guy. It's like, no, this is a technical thing. We are telling a story, and part of the way you tell a story is by being technically sound in your fight scenes. You want to be technically sound with your sex scenes, and intimacy coordinator only enhances that. There are some scenes where you look at them on a movie or a TV show, like they are going in. God. And you're like, is this porn? Should I be watching this? That's the same. Whether it's straight or a gay sex scene. Like, it's like sometimes they're really good. Are these guys dating? You know, it's really intense. They be going in. So you want to be technical with. I'd shot a scene and then I was nervous when I did that streetcar scene. When I did that play, I was nervous because I was a black dude in Frederick, Maryland, Emmitsburg, Maryland, touching on these white girls. And her father was from South Carolina. And after the show that her dad, he's like, oh, my God, you were so great. He didn't even talk like I thought that he would talk, but he was just like, he was like, oh, you're so great. Because, I mean, you know. I was still nervous because I knew, you know, and I think I was complaining about something. And my dad, he said, man, you remember you touched that white girl on her. You slapped that white girl's ass, man. I'm trying to remember what the context was. I think I was talking something about my history with the drama club in college or something. He's like, you slapped that white girl's ass, bro. He didn't say bro, but he's like, you slapped that white girl ass. Oh, I miss my dad. Fuck. Because I could call him. You know, if he was still here, I could call him. Do you remember that? He'd be like, yeah, man. That was a lot. So, you know, like that was, yeah, you don't want to be nobody wants to be a creep. You know, not intentionally, you know, I shot something earlier this summer where I was playing a bouncer and one of the characters was it's one of the main characters on the show, beautiful actress. And she was like, oh, you know, you can push me. I was like, no, I don't want to, because I even justified it in the script. I was just like, look. She was drunk. Your character, she's like, you're drunk. You're light work to me. You're just a tiny girl. You're light work. And I'm not going to really manhandle you. But she was like, you have to touch me. And I was like, okay. No, but I just wanted to be safe. And I was, it's not like I was afraid of being Me Too'd, but it's just like, you're not. But I had to give her, I still had to give her something as her scene partner. But they wouldn't have an intimacy coordinator for that. But it would just be an agreement that we're doing this and we're pretending. We're not, you know, like, I want it to be real. Like, fuck no, you're not. You want to fulfill the demands of the script, and you want to do your job. And I don't know why he would say that. See, I haven't read the article, so I don't know the context of what he was talking about, but you know, he could have been talking about a whole lot of other things, but that's what they pulled from it. But it does, cause when I first saw it, I was like, that's random as hell. Like, that's mad. Like, why would that come up? It's just like, hey, what's wrong with that? They missed the technical, you know, I don't know. What I am glad of is that these ladies clapped back at that. So it makes everybody else aware of just being respectful to your scene partner, because it's not a solo act. It's you up there with these other people, and you're supposed to be a team. And that sounds corny as hell, but you're supposed to be a freaking team, bro. So I just thought that was interesting. It just ran my head. It just messes everything. It messes up the flow. What else? A couple of my friends independently messaged me about this new Last of Us TV, HBO Last of Us casting. And they've already shot it, but they just dropped the fact. The two actors who are playing Sam and Henry on the Last of Us TV show, two brothers. And all I just wrote back, I was just like, they gonna die, because that's what happens in the video game. Or maybe they won't. But Naughty Dog has a tendency, with the exception of Uncharted, where like black characters just get killed. I want to see Naughty Dog make a really good character-driven game with a black protagonist. I want to see that, because that would be fucking awesome. They've already pushed the ball forward with having LGBTQ main characters. They had a trans character. So I want to see a black character that makes it through the end credits, that survives, that you get a playable character that makes it through the end of the game. I'm excited about this show. I'm excited about this new game that comes out in September. I haven't played much of anything. I did play The Quarry. I haven't beaten that yet. I only had like one sitting of that so far. I got mad because one of my characters died. There's so much with these games, even though it's just like an interactive game, these supermassive games where, you know, you might do a quick time thing here or there. I talked about it last week, I think, but I just got bummed out that I lost a character already. And maybe I was like an hour and a half, 2 hours in, and I lost a character. I was just kind of pissed off at myself. So I might start over. I don't know. So I'm happy. I'm excited. I guess hopefully it's coming out early next year. I'm really excited to see what they do with this. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be really good. Excited about that. Excited about the game. Let's talk about some television. Better Call Saul, man. This latest episode, episode 12, Waterworks. It seems like they're gonna stick the landing. I thought this was, because I thought episode 10, that could have been a finale. I mean, spoiler alert, if you're not watching this show, I don't know what the fuck you're doing. I'll do like a postmortem on Better Call Saul with somebody who watches. It's so good. My God. JL said on his show that he thought that I was mad at him because I don't know why I would be mad. Like, I love both Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. I'm doing a rewatch of Better Call Saul now. I think I'm on episode 8 of season 1. I rewatched the last couple episodes of Breaking Bad and just to reorient myself. I just think it's fantastic television. I think, you know, and I said this last week or the week before last, I think Better Call Saul has the luxury of living off that world that Vince Gilligan created in Breaking Bad. But at the same time, it's like an evolution of, it's not an evolution. It's just a, it's not even a facet. It's multifaceted. I don't know. I have to think on it some more, but I just think it's, they're both amazing. This transformation that Jimmy makes, because the people who he's really loved in his life have kind of let him down, and his reaction to that are his. I don't know. He's still fucked up, but you get to see why he becomes who he becomes. And I don't know. I think it's a remarkable show. It's so good. I like watching YouTube theories. I like all the commentary. I like listening to the Better Call Saul podcast, the official one that the creators talk about. I used to do that with Breaking Bad also. I used to listen to that podcast. The acting is phenomenal. I think Ray Seahorn, that episode, like that's what you submit, and you can go to that bus scene that she does. Total Joan Allen Pleasantville vibes with her character in that episode, especially being in the black and white. And Bob Odenkirk, man, it's almost like, dude, you had it. And it's the same. They kind of Walter White, Jimmy, Saul, Gene, Jimmy. It's really Jimmy. It's all Jimmy. Couldn't leave well enough alone. Walt was going to die anyway. So I could see why he went back, and he couldn't let that gray matter shit go. And then Jimmy just like that fucking ego after he gets hurt again. He's like, fuck it. And his descent. And I just thought it was so masterful how they have him as Gene Takovic at the top of the series. And each season you get a little bit of a glimpse, and that's all you get. And then you get his story. You get those flat. We know what I do think. It doesn't matter if what's better or not. What I think that Gilligan and his crew are great at, some of the greatest flashbacks that I've ever seen in television. As how they relate to the character, why the character behaves how they are in present day, in their present life, and how things have affected them when they were younger or in a previous, you know, obviously the flashbacks when they're going to be younger, and you know what I'm talking about. But just as it pertains to just character development, how it's shot without them telling you, the way things are framed. Oh, it's a masterful show. That whole team is just, it's a marvel to watch. I've just really enjoyed it. I don't have any bad things to say about it. That's like one of the you know, with Breaking Bad, you know, like I said, Barry's the only show in recent memory since, 2013, where I've been like, I've had anxiety about a show. Better Call Saul, I feel the same way, especially as the end nears. I mean, when they gave us, I don't know, some of the nerds on like YouTube were trying to say that the Nippy episode was like, wasn't that good. I'm like, what show are you watching? What do you watch? The show could have ended on episode 10. What's episode 10? Just like Breaking Bad, the series could have ended on that. What's that episode where he's like, I won? It could have just fucking ended there on a bump. when Walt calls, oh my God, Skyler. Let me see. Better Call Saul. What is this episode? Season 6. Fun and Games. That transition. She leaves. Kim leaves. And that bed transition to where he's got the hooker in the bed. And then you see, because you don't know what happens to Kim at the top of the season. And that's the only thing, like, they raid his house. You don't know when that, well, that's probably right after Walt got killed, I would assume. Phenomenal show, man. I don't know what people are talking about, because that's what I've been wanting to see. Like, everything's been interesting throughout the 6 seasons. But then you finally get, okay, who, Gene Takovic, who has he become? Okay, he's his manager at Cinnabon. What's his life like? Then you find out, after he has that phone conversation. No, wait. He's being, well, He does it to frame Jeff and his buddy, but then he gets the thirst and goes even deeper and just fucks his life up. I don't know. I have to have somebody on and talk about this. I think the show's terrific, and it's just been a marvel to watch. It's just been so much fun. JL, I'm not mad at you, bro. I don't know why. I was not on the writing team. I was not on the show. I don't have any connection to the show, just that I think it's fantastic. Speaking of JL, though, he did recommend Kevin Can Fuck Himself. And I do like this show. I just finished watching the last episode yesterday, and it is very good. I'll read you the blurb. Kevin Can F Himself is a dark comedy that alternates between traditional multicam sitcom and single cam drama. Set in Worcester, Mass., the series follows the journey of Allison McRoberts, a stereotypically smart and beautiful sitcom wife who is married to Kevin, a husky, self-centered man-child who is clearly punching above his weight. After making a dark discovery, Allison teams up with neighbor Patty O'Connor as she attempts to escape the confines of her life and take control of her fate. This is really good. This is a really... It stars... Annie Murphy from Schitt's Creek, as she plays Allison, and Eric Peterson plays Kevin. I have not watched, I think I maybe watched one episode of Schitt's Creek, and I did like it. I just didn't stick with it. And Allison Murphy, I mean, Annie Murphy won, I believe she won. She's an award-winning actress. Let's just put it that way. What did she win for? Now I want to know what she won for. Oh boy. Now I went down this rabbit hole. She won a Primetime Emmy Award and a screen. Did she win for Schitt's Creek? I think she did, right? Let me look this up, because now I'm thinking about it. What show? She won. Where's Golden Globe? Oh, She won a SAG award for Schitt's Creek. She won an Emmy. Okay, that's a big one she won. She did win an Emmy for Schitt's Creek. Okay, I was right. This show is really good. So she plays this. It starts out as a typical sitcom where they're making these wisecracks. And every time she's with Kevin, it's a sitcom. It's a multicam. And so you get the laugh track. But then when she leaves the living room and goes into the kitchen by herself, it gets dark. Like it's a regular one camera drama. And that's what her life is really like, except for when she's on with Kevin. Whenever she's with him, it's a sitcom. It's a really interesting and fun premise, and it gets dark. And the places they go, I don't want to spoil anything, but it is worth watching. It's on Amazon Prime. It's on AMC Plus, but if you have that, but if you have AMC, if you have Amazon Prime, it's available for free. You know, you're paying, you know what I'm talking about. If you got Amazon Prime, you can watch this show. Season two, the final season two is coming out pretty soon, in a couple weeks, I believe. By month's end, it'll start. So it's really good. It's really funny. It's dark. And it just makes you look at these characters, because that's been a thing all the time. Like, that's been talked about, the really hot wife. And the schlubby guy who's married to her, and he's kind of dumb. I can't find my socks, honey. What up? What the fuck? You know? So it really makes Kevin look like a piece of shit. Like, that character, that archetype, you know, just is essentially an asshole, a villain. He is a villain. If you watch this show, you'll really see that. So I like that show a lot. I'm looking forward to season two to watch that. Anything else? Any other shows? Industry is back on HBO. Lena Dunham's an EP on that. I really like that, so I might watch. The second episode dropped yesterday, so I might watch that tonight before I fall asleep. Let's do some movies and some Muzak, and we'll get out of here. Wow, I've been talking for over an hour. That's pretty good. I didn't know how long this was going to be. I did ramble a lot. I hope there's something you got from it. But I wanted to give you something. So let me give you a couple music reviews, music recommendations, rather. This kid, Kenyon Dixon, he's got this album out called Closer. Amazing. I love this album. Wire to Wire, fucking good. I don't know how I found out about this guy. I think I found out about him through Uncle Krizzle on Instagram. I think Uncle Krizzle, let me make sure, because I think he's posted about him. He's really good. He's a filmmaker. No, I mean, he's a film critic, and he randomly posts. This isn't the first time he's done this, but he'll like randomly post something, and he'll post like, oh, if he's listening to, like, he might have been listening to one of these records, and he just screenshotted it and say, oh, this is good. And majority of the time that I've, damn near every time I looked on his thing and like jotted the artist down or put him on my playlist on Apple Music, it's been good. This guy's fucking good, man. He's an R&B singer. He's from Watts. Really nice melodies. And like, people are saying like R&B is dead, and they're making those bullshit claims. It's not. You just have to work harder to find this stuff. I was almost tempted to go see him live, because last week he was playing at in Brooklyn. I think it's Baby's All Right. One of those shows. One of those room venues. Really, really talented guy. Really, just kind of a, I don't know if you could even call him a throwback. If it's like, if I could sing like that, I would be like this dude. You know, he's really good. He's really talented. It's like, it's like, it's, it's contemporary, but it's throwback. It's like, it's almost like how I was talking about Joey Badass a week ago. Like, it's like, I'm an R&B dude. I'm going to sing I Love You, or I'm going to talk about love and relationships and stuff. But it's like, I'm still putting his spin on it. You know what I mean? So I think that's a good way to look at it. Like, if you like, he is, can I get this analogy right? Kenyon Dixon is to R&B music what Joey Badass is to rap music, is to hip hop. This album's really good. It's just like very, it's actually really refreshing too. It's refreshing to hear. I don't know how old this guy is. He's got to be in his mid to late 20s or something. I don't know how old. Let me see. Can I do Kenyon Dixon? How old? Age. I don't see anything. I have to do some more research on this guy. But he's very talented, man. I just very pleasant. Very nice to hear somebody like him. I really think he's great. I still have some of these melodies of his in my head. Just fucking beautiful. It's fucking beautiful, man. What else? Another artist, Ravina. I found out about her. I was watching, I don't know what I was watching a TV show, and one of her songs came up, and I Shazammed it. Let me see. Let me see what the record is. I think it's called, is it Lucid? Oh no, I don't remember the record. Oh man. I don't know. It was one of the songs. Maybe I can find it. Maybe I can look at, can I look at it through Shazam? Can I look at it through, this is riveting podcasting here. Let me see if I can look at my music. Oh man, is that gonna give me, which way is this going? Last Sync to Cloud, August 10th. Can I see what I, damn, I thought I, man, I don't think it, anyway, she is very good. And if you're interested, you should check out, she also did a Tiny Desk not too long ago. And I found that as I was researching her stuff. I just want to see if I could find that song, because I think I texted it to a friend. Oh, man. I want to see. I texted it to a friend. Now this shit isn't even opening. Oh, man. I know. Let me see if I can click on. Of course, there's an ad. When you just want to hear music, and I'm not going to play it, but I just want to give you the title. So if you listen to the you listen to this record, you can see if you want to hear more. What's this? It's called Lucid. Okay, Ravine. Oh, wait. I think it's called Floating. Okay, I didn't play. It's called Floating by Ravina. Ravina. So she's got this song called Floating, and it's featuring Hope Tala. And that's what got me into her. I can't remember the show that it was on, but very good. She's very good. And check out her Tiny Desk if you're interested in that. And we'll do a couple movies and we'll get the hell out of here. I saw Bullet Train last week. I went to an early screening of it. I think it was on a Tuesday of last week, and I saw it in Dolby. I'll read you the blurb here. Ladybug is an unlucky assassin who's determined to do his job peacefully after, excuse me, one too many gigs has gone off the rails. Is that supposed to be have gone off? I don't know. Fate, however, may have other plans, as his latest mission puts him on a collision course with lethal adversaries from around the globe, all with connected yet conflicting objectives on the world's fastest train. This movie was directed by David Leitch and stars Brad Pitt, Bad Bunny, Joey King, Aaron Taylor Johnson, and Brian Tyree Henry, among others. Fun movie. I really enjoyed it. I had a good time watching this. Kind of reminded me of this movie, Smoke and Aces, with all these different characters and like the assassins and shit. It was like Common and Alicia Keys was in it, and like a wild movie. But I think this was better, though. I remember thinking Smoke and Aces was all right, but Bullet Train was fun. It was very entertaining. Some of the jokes were okay, but it was just like the fight choreography was awesome. So it's just like you kind of let some of the corny jokes go because the action was really good. And it's fun. It's a good time. I just think if you're into seeing something fun, it's definitely worth checking out. It's not something that you have to run to see at the theaters, but I think you would have a good time if you just want to get out there and see something new. I really did. I really enjoyed that. The next movie, some cameos too. The next movie I saw was Resurrection. I rented this. This was playing in the theaters a week before it got released on VOD. It was playing at the IFC Center in the city. It was playing like somewhere in Beacon, New York. And it was also playing at a weird ass time in Montclair at the Claridge. And I could have gone to the theater, but I think I was doing something. I was busy and couldn't make it. And then I read somewhere that it was coming out on VOD like in a couple days. So I was like, bet. So last weekend I rented it, and this is my James Lip. If you want to see acting at its apex, rent Resurrection with the wonderful Rebecca Hall. Rebecca Hall just is fantastic. She directed that movie. Let me read you this blurb here first. Let's read the Google blurb. A woman's carefully constructed life gets upended when an unwelcome shadow from her past returns, forcing her to confront the monster she's evaded for two decades. Rebecca Hall. It stars Rebecca Hall and Tim Roth. This movie is a little bonkers. It's fucking nuts. But this performance by Rebecca Hall is fantastic. I've always liked Rebecca Hall. Never had a problem with her. Enjoyed all, just a very good actress. But she did that. She directed that film, the Passing last year. That got some critical acclaim and really good. I was like, why is she doing this movie about somebody passing? Because her grandfather is black. I think her grandfather, somebody is like black on. And you'd have to look her interviews that she did. Somebody black. Because when I think Randolph and I were talking about it, it's like, why she did it? Somebody black. She black. And she, you know, she got that. It's that one drop. So. Welcome to the cookout, Rebecca. She's beautiful, stunning actress, and I've always liked her. But the most recently, just looking at this flick that she did, Tales from the Loop. Do I know that one? I have not seen that. No, I have not. This film called The Night House, which was, I talked about last year. It was a horror movie. One of the first few movies I went back to the theater to see, because it looked like a nice horror movie, solid movie, but her performance was just so good. It was so good. There was horror elements to it, but she was also funny. Like even like the levity, she found the levity in the script and utilized it, but it was overall, it was a horror film. got kind of weird at the end. It lost a little steam, but she's fucking great. I put this up there with Toni Collette in Hereditary, Lupita Nyong'o in Us, and my girl from Midsommar. What's my girl? Zach Braff is lucky to date her. What's her name? Florence Pugh. Like those horror movies where it's like, it's not going to get the love that it should get. It's not going to get like Oscar attention. But it's like, if you just want to see some really good acting and running, JL's head might explode as I say this, but some of the best running, movie running since Tom Cruise. Man or woman, them or they, she's got to be in the conversation now. Now we got to see her run in other films, but the way she was running in this one, I was like, yo, she's not messing around, man. This is a terrific performance from Rebecca Hall. If you like horror movies, if you're in it, it's weird. There's a couple jump scares. It's not necessarily that scary. But it's a lot about, like, it's about gaslighting. It's about, it is definitely about some gaslighting. But the less that you know about this movie, the better your experience will be. But it's basically a woman who has to reckon with her past from 20 years ago. She gets confronted with her past, and it's basically how she deals with that once she's confronted with it. And it's good. It's good. It's a little batshit crazy towards the end. But I tell you, if you want to see some really good acting, you want to see something just really good, it's worth seeing. And they filmed it in Albany, which is like upstate New York, one of my favorite cities to perform in. I've had some good times performing there. And I knew it was Albany because it was at the Egg. Like she was running. I think she was doing a scene where she was jogging, and she either went past it, or they just did a shot of it for, as an exterior. But she was there. They filmed a lot of it in Albany. And I looked. I was like, "Is that the Egg?" You Google the Egg in Albany. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's a very recognizable theater. I've never performed there, but one day possibly we'll see. I have performed at the State Theater there, but they moved, and I did. And Proctor's Theater I've performed at. Two of the theaters in Proctor's I've performed at. With Joe List, who's the star of 4th of July, the Louis C.K. movie that I need to check out eventually. That's available on VOD too. I have to check that out. I want to see that. But yeah, Resurrection's terrific if you just want to stay home and rent something this weekend. And Bullet Train is a good time if you're into that. Also, Prey is good. I forgot. I was going to talk. Damn it. I thought I was going to dismount. But we could talk about Prey a little bit. I mean, that was... let's see. Here we go. What are you doing, Chris? A skilled Comanche warrior protects her tribe from a highly evolved alien predator that hunts humans for sport. Fighting against wilderness, dangerous colonizers, and this mysterious creature to keep her people safe. This movie was directed by Dan Trachtenberg. What else did he do? He did. What has he done? 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is very good. Very good movie. Some say the best of the Cloverfield movies. And it stars Amber Midhunter, who I have never heard of since then, but she's an indigenous American actor. She's been in some stuff. This movie's very good. I really enjoyed it. I saw all the buzz. I saw a lot of nerds talking about it on YouTube. And I didn't click on anything because I wanted to see it, but it just kept coming up on my feed, on Twitter. people were talking about it. It was on Hulu. It's still on Hulu. It's on Hulu. And I just said, okay, all right. I'll watch it. I will do what the algorithm is telling me to do for a change. All right? Jesus. And boy, did I have a good time. A lot of fun. Really enjoyed it. It almost, and then some people were arguing that it should be in the theaters. I think it could have been. But it was fun, man. Really, really enjoyed it. A lot of fun. I love those movies. There's, you know, a movie's good when people try to cause a hullabaloo about stuff, something being woke. And it's just a female protagonist fighting a monster. You know, somebody posted the meme of like, oh, I can't, this is so woke. And it's like, okay, then they posted a picture of Sigourney Weaver in Aliens. Like, I don't know. And it's not even trying to be like a male feminist or anything like that. If you listen to this podcast long enough, I'm delivering this podcast on my cluttered desk is a statue of Ellie from The Last of Us. I have the neon droid, the little tiny Ellie action figure. I mean, you've heard me talk about Lara Croft as one of my favorite heroes, but Ellie has surpassed Lara Croft, like, after The Last of Us Part 2. Because Ellie's more real. Ellie's more real, bro. I never had a problem with female protagonists. Love that movie, and love the fact that it's this indigenous actress, Comanche, you know, it's good. I think a lot of people, I mean, the consensus is that people really, really dig this movie, and they're right. Sometimes a lot of people like some shit. 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's fun. And I'm just a big movie fan, and I watch pretty much anything. The thing that I tend to get drawn to the most are these like small stories. I've raved about Medicine for Melancholy, just like a small intimate type thing. I love those things, but sometimes when they're on a big scale, and this has the feel of just like a straightforward action movie, a hero's journey. Smart. The character was smart. It's just a terrific, fun film. I really dug it. And I tweeted this, folks. I said, what did I say? Excuse me. I said, watching Prey movie, I'm not sure who's the biggest threat, the predator or the colonizers, because this movie took place in like in the 1700s. I think, let's see what it, I think you call that the 18th century, if I'm not mistaken, in 1719. Yeah. Great Plains. The Great Plains are what? Located west of the Mississippi River and east of the Rocky Mountains. Much of it covered in prairie grassland. Yeah, I think it's good. And I think if you're into action movies, you'll be into it. If you have a Hulu subscription, it's right there for you to watch. You don't have to go anywhere. You just click play, and it's fun. It's a good one. All right, folks, I think that's it. I think I've talked to you enough today. I've rambled very much. I've rambled a lot. And I hope that you got something out of it. Hope it got you through your commute, your laundry, some of your TPS reports, or whatever. But either way, thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you, and I will talk to you all next time. Take it easy, everybody.